Now we're taking up the second part of how to do viewpoint straight wire and the considerations which enter in here. The fact of the matter is that your preclear may find you a little bit incomprehensible at times, so that you should be prepared to shift the wording of your questions. It's your job to communicate. You are the auditor. And if the phrases which you're using are not communicating with this preclear, then by golly, you had better change it around until you can communicate with the preclear. Therefore, it's up to you as an auditor to know the basic theory of what you're working with rather than a flock of words. All right, the basic theory of viewpoint straight wire is this. An individual should be able to tolerate any viewpoint in the whole universe. If he can't tolerate every viewpoint in this universe, he's not free in this universe, because there'll be places in the universe he can't be. He can't be in these places, and he can't be these things. So therefore, those things are barred to him. And as long as these are barred to him, he is, of course, that much restricted. Freedom has as its antithesis the restriction. And restriction is itself simply an enclosure by distances or barriers. Remember, then, that our problem of viewing is a problem of distance, and viewing something is a problem of barriers. So that we've got distance and barriers as solid masses, two kinds of barriers, in this toleration of. And that is, in essence, the theory back of viewpoint straight wire. Well, now, knowing that theory and knowing where we're going, you should, therefore, be able to direct the preclear with many kinds of language and many phrases. But these have been found to be very useful as phrases, and it's a permissive method of auditing. But after you have gone over a process like this a few times with a preclear, he will get tired of your wording, because he can't duplicate anyhow. That's very well, so that's why he's preclear. So you should be able to shift your wording around one way or the other, trying to get him to tolerate a viewpoint. Now, let me give you a very simple test for a preclear, a very simple test. You say, now, let's get somebody that, just somebody you know. And he says, yeah, Oscar. Okay? You say, now, can you, how would you like to be Oscar? And, no, sir. Oh, no, not Oscar, no. Test. What's the matter with him? We've directly applied this theory. What's the matter with your preclear? He can't be Oscar. After you've worked him for a session or two with viewpoint straight wire, you'll discover something new has happened. You'll say, all right, get the idea of somebody in the world. See, he's never caught on to this, probably, what you're trying to do. Get the idea of somebody. He'll say, oh, yes, old woman that sells fruit down in the corner. You'll say, all right, now get the idea of being her.
Well, mm-hmm.
Kind of a worrisome life. What's happened to your preclear? He has been able to tolerate viewpoints now. And you will discover that a preclear you're having difficulty with will respond this way. No. See? No. He just wouldn't be anybody. Well, now, be anybody means view from anybody. He's got the idea that to be somebody would mean that you'd have to have an enormous number of considerations appended to it, whereas you will bring him up to the point where it actually means, can you look from the spot which he is occupying? And he'll get up to the point where he's perfectly willing to look ready from any spot in the universe. But the considerations of Oscar, or the old lady that runs the fruit stand, are so overpowering to him, so impressive to him, that he couldn't subject himself to these considerations. It would mean the loss of his identity. It would mean this. It would mean that. I mean, he has tremendous rationale as to why he can't be any of these things. Well, that is a simple test, and of course it is a test of the theory itself, because if we were to rack these people up against other types of tests, even an unreliable test like a Rorschach, for instance. You know what a Rorschach is? A Rorschach is a game which was invented in the early part of the 17th century, where they used to spill some ink on a piece of paper and then fold the piece of paper, which would give you a new pattern, and then they would open it up. This was a kid's game. And they'd open it up, and they'd say, what is it? And the kid would say, it's a bear or something of the sort. So they'd spill some more ink. And Finally, somebody got into the cymbal band, well below effort in the field of psychology, and they decided there was terrible significance to this, and so we got the Rorschach test. Well, it takes about 4 years for a person to learn how to evaluate a Rorschach test for the excellent reason that there's no way to evaluate one. But they have given these to people in insane asylums and have racked up quite a bit of data on them so that people who say, this is a fox to a certain Rorschach plate, can therefore be suspected of, one, being utterly insane, two, being a paranoid, two, being a schizophrenic, two, being a bear, two, being a man, two, being sane, two, being a ship captain. In other words, very specific. And this, of course, is what people evaluate the sanity of people on. I'll tell you how to take a Rorschach test, by the way. If you want a Rorschach test to make you insane, if, you know, you want the psychiatrist to be absolutely certain you're insane, see sexual symbols throughout the test. And this is good enough for him. And if you want a fellow to be absolutely sure that you're sane, just say it's ink. Just keep saying it's ink. I don't see anything in it. I see a piece of paper and some ink. And this, of course, will eventually baffle him utterly, and he'll have to mark you up as completely rational and sane. The truth of the matter is, it's a game, and people who can play the game are perfectly willing to play the psychiatrist game for a moment or two, and they say, he expects me to see something in it, so I'll see something in it. And then he has vast significances for this. He saw a fox. Fox. Let's see, there's a legend. There's a legend that has to do with a fox and some grapes. Grapes resemble testes, so actually she's insane because this is on the sexual band, isn't it? I mean, it's just that psychotic. But this type of testing, or any other type of testing, or more observably, your testing, which is to say, is this guy getting along in life? Is this guy handling his problems? Is this bird taking any pleasure viewing anything? That's your test. And you will discover that individuals who aren't getting along in life, who are having a rough time, who are having delusions and this sort of thing, are on a gradient scale of unwillingness to assume viewpoints. Now, they get so unwilling, finally, to assume viewpoints that they'll make their body more or less just sit in one place. They found out, after letting the body sit there for a few minutes, that nothing hit it. And so they will assume then that it can probably sit there for a few minutes more without anything hitting it. And having done this, then they can assume this is fairly safe, and they become almost completely immobile. This is your catatonic, you see, a catatonic state in its extremity. And it's just the willingness of an individual to assume viewpoints. And that makes for you a very, very excellent a very excellent and extremely reliable index of the ability, rationality, capability of your preclear. And there's scientometry complete. Now, we have then this as a target. Supposing you hit a preclear in this that said, well, I don't know, what wouldn't I mind knowing? Well, it wasn't anything I wouldn't mind knowing. And so on, and he goes down the line, and you just don't get any place there. You know, there's something very interesting that may be taking place here. You may have been using viewpoint straight wire in its rather covert form of viewpoint straight wire, you see, which hits most cases, and you should have been using the definition. Well, how would you use just the definition and the goal of this process? You'd say to the individual, find something in the room you think it's safe to look at. Yep. Find something else in the room that's safe for you to look at. Yep. Find something else in the room that's safe for you to look at. Yep. Find something in the room that's going on that would be safe for you to look at. Yep. Find something around here that would be safe for you to listen to. Yep. Find something else that would be safe for you to listen to. Yep. Hey, I can see the whole room. Huh, I can hear everything, too, while I'm exteriorized. Rather direct, huh? Well, now, don't ever get hung up on a case. Just because they don't see much point in hitting this covert line, don't just immediately abandon the process. At least test it by definition. And after you run it for a short time by definition, is what is it safe for you to look at here? You know, what's it all right for you to look at in this room? What's it all right for you to feel? What's it all right for you to be in this room? Anything that's behaving do. We'll go after that in a moment. Your whole process, as we run along the line, is just reduced to the immediate environment perception of. And you just run it that way. Notice sex, immediate environment. What is it safe to? What is it all right to? What wouldn't you mind looking at in this environment right here and now? And what do you know? Some pre-clear that's been coasting along and all kinds of covert processes been missing this pre-clear in all directions. Because they just didn't hit at the definition of what the Thetan was actually trying to do, you see? And this case was all ready to see, feel, hear, act, be, everything. And all you had to do was just process right straight in the environment, and you got a full turn on of perception. All right, is there any truth in this process? That is to say, is there any great workability in it? Is it a real center-line process? Believe me, it is, because you can take the definition of the process and apply it just the way I said to a case who's not having a very hard time, but bang, on his perceptions will come. So you've got somebody who exteriorizes the black five. The fact that he can exteriorize the black five is good enough to tell you that he can exteriorize, see, tells you he's not a black five. Just tells you he's got some kind of a consideration which has shut his perceptions off. That's all. He thinks there's something in the environment from way back somewhere. Because after an individual puts up a barricade, after he puts one up, he can ask the question forevermore thereafter, is it the thing I put it up against still there? He put it up against a lion back in Abyssinia in the 12th century, and he sees this black patch, and the black patch has got a little thought label on it, and it says there's a lion here. See, there's no lion there. The lion went away at 1201, and the black patch was still there because he didn't see the lion go away. He was not sure the lion departed, therefore he still has the screen. And you get this fellow exteriorized. He's just a fellow whose perception will turn on with great rapidity by the straight use of this definition. If you can get somebody out and his perceptions aren't on, then you just drill him on the definition itself. How good is the process? It is utterly unlimited. It is the center line of why perceptions go off. Perceptions go off because a person believes that there are a lot of things around that aren't safe to look at, that aren't all right to know, that aren't all right to see, to be, to hear, any of these things. And so he keeps shutting down, putting up the screens, and putting up the screens, and putting up the screens. After all, he says, boy, it must be dangerous. Because back of every screen, there's something dangerous. Because every time he put up a screen, it was to occlude something that was dangerous to him. He didn't want to view. Well, those are all gone now, so he can turn his perception on. Just asking him what's safe. Now, get the connection between this and contact. Step 7, SOP 8. Old SOP 8. Contact. Let's get something in the room here that's real. Same thing. What in this room is safe for you to look at? Same question, different phrases. And you've just asked the Thetan to do this trick. But the way to get the Thetan to do the trick is to ask him what's safe for him to look at, what's safe for him to feel, to smell, to hear, so on. Well, that's then a very workable process and one that you should use and know. Now, the process then moves into actually exteriorization processes, and if run any length of time, should wind up in exterioration. If you boost it along a little bit by giving me three spots in the body, find three spots in the body, three spots in the room, or hold the two back anchor points of the room, or do this, do that, which is exteriorization. You know, three places where you're not, so on. You can also do it to some degree with 8D. Give me some place where the body is safe. Some places this, some places that. While you're working a fellow in a body, though, as far as he's concerned as the Thetan, the body's sight is not entirely reliable. The body is evaluating for him. It's telling him whether or not anything is there. And he's having his difficulty with that. The best thing to do is to get him looking as a Thetan. Now, actually, he can look right straight through a head. He doesn't have to look at a head. He can be in a head and look straight through it and look out of it. Well, the common denominator of all screens, of all objects, of all motion, is effort. This is a common denominator of all these things. Effort is also a common denominator for motion. You're looking at energy particles. So if an individual cannot tolerate energy particles, their motion, and so forth, why he's having a rough time of it. If an individual cannot tolerate particles and their motion, of course then he won't be able to tolerate any real kind of form. He won't be able to tolerate light. He won't be able to tolerate emotion. He won't be able to tolerate work or play. Now, there's another thing about that you should realize, that if he can't tolerate effort particles, he's certainly not going to tolerate a combination of effort particles resulting in a form. So he doesn't have visio. If an individual can't tolerate effort, he can't have visio. If he can't tolerate motion, motion is a prime symptom of the presence of effort particles. So if he can't have motion, if he can't seize mock-ups in motion or something of that sort, why, he can't tolerate effort. So the individual really hangs up on this band below effort. And therefore, that puts the fields like 19th century psychology, psychoanalysis, Middle Ages psychiatry into the categories which are below effort. So they would then only study the categories below effort. And these categories would be figure, symbols, eat, and sex. And that would be about the limit of their view, because they themselves would be incapable of viewing above the effort band. They were concerned about the human mind because they themselves were normally concerned about the human mind. You would have to come along and view this from another view. The human mind is an interesting mechanism, and this is a good game. It's not a very serious game. And we'd have to take a look at this. And the first things you'd see on the band, of course, would be at the top, you'd see knowingness. You know, people are trying to know and not know, and knowingness can be instantaneous, not knowing instantaneous. And this is very interesting, that human beings don't know this. You know, knowingness can be instantaneous. You could know this moment what's playing at the Center Theater in Chicago. Bang. By doing what? Looking? Well, what do you want to look for? Reassure yourself? That's what looking this is. So now we get the fellow who's trying to reassure himself. Well, he's looking. And I saw a little boy one time, Igorodi boy up in the Philippines. Little tiny kid. He must have been about 3.5, 4, something like that. And we were out, and tremendous thickets of sawgrass and thorn bushes were all around. And I opined that it was awful thirsty around here, which it always is in the Philippines. And, by the way, you know, the only reason the U.S. Navy finally got mad at the Japanese Navy was that the Japanese, you know, blew up the San Miguel Brewery in Manila. And this was a favorite Philippine island landmark for the U.S. Navy. And the U.S. Navy really didn't take the war seriously for a while there until they finally found out the Japanese had done this, and then they just sunk the whole Japanese Navy. I mean, there was no holding them. Anyway, I find I was very thirsty, and he opined that there was some beer in his father's house, and he took off. Now, we had come there by trail, and I suppose this kid considered that going by trail to come here must have been a very silly thing indeed, because obviously there weren't any obstacles between house and where we were. And he just took off on a beeline. He went through thorn bushes and sawgrass that if I'd stepped into or even put my hand into, it would have been cut to ribbons. And he came back the same way with bear in just about zoom, zoom length of time, see, without a scratch on him. And I said, "Do you mind doing that again?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Well, just that little knoll over there. We'll run over there and come back." He did, not a scratch on him. I said, "There's magic going on here. Human bodies obviously have no mass." So I rather incautiously decided I would take a few steps in that direction just to see what he was avoiding. It wasn't that he was small, because I made myself very, very small, much smaller than himself. And started through this, scrape, drop. I had 2 tears in my shirt and an ugly gash on my hand and about 3 feet. And I got back on the trail again and decided that there was just something about the ability to see and dodge a particle which I didn't quite understand. He could see and dodge particles much faster than I could rack up how many particles there would be in his course, you see. See them and dodge them. Zing, boom. And he'd go through openings that were almost completely closed. Well, now, that fellow had a terrific tolerance, of course, of motion. He had a terrific tolerance of particles, and he didn't get hurt. Now, as an individual becomes incapable of seeing, avoiding, measuring, estimating particles, he starts to get hurt. When does a person really start to get hurt? It's when they start to get afraid of particles, because thereafter they do not estimate their position. And therefore, an accident-proneness is a very bad condition mentally. Now, you, by the way, can find somebody who's hurting his leg. You know, he hurts his leg today, and he hurts it next week, and he hurts it week after next, and so forth. You start processing, you'll find out he's just trying like mad to get rid of that leg. Not he is, but the machinery, the way it's racked up there. He's trying to get rid of the leg so that he will actually get himself into accidents. He's breaking down this measurement of particles. He doesn't want to measure particles. He can't tolerate them. He can't view them. He decides the best way to do with this leg that keeps hitting everything is to make it hit everything and so get rid of it, which is just a Q&A solution. All of our questions, then, in viewpoint straight wire, should be measured against this. We are going toward instantaneous knowingness. Therefore, instantaneous knowingness is a goal there, which is above being able to tolerate any viewpoint in this universe. But the first goal is to tolerate any viewpoint in this universe, and after that, an individual is competent in individually, instantaneously knowing anything he wants to know at any distance. But we'd have to get through the band of he's had to be willing to view before he can know. See, he's once upon a time was terribly dependent upon viewing, and he just naturally will backtrack that one. You get somebody who can't look, who can't see, who can't exteriorize, who is now setting up an instantaneous knowingness all over the place, and you've got somebody who's bogged into telepathy, which is a lower sort of squeeze manifestation of knowingness. A very unpleasant sort of a thing. He's wired his circuits up in such a way so that he doesn't have to look. And what he instantaneously knows by telepathy can be right sometimes and wrong most of the time, which is a dreadful state of confusion. Now, be having do straight wire is, of course, the same thing here. We just dignify it by just calling to your attention that we have be having do here as prime activities. B is equivalent of space, and of course becomes objects as an individual compresses space down. Do is the motion of particles. Have is this idea that I have created, or I own, or I possess what somebody else created in terms of particles, or I can look at it. I can have it and I can look at it are practically synonymous. It is mine and I can see it are synonymous. It is not mine. It belongs to somebody else, is I can't see it. These people who were walking around here, we're getting into AD now, these people who are walking around unable to view anything, and we can't seem to straighten it out, and viewpoint straight wires upsetting them, are running into ownership, protection, and hiding way down on the band to such a degree. Not only can they not tolerate effort particles, but they know full well that every effort particle in the world belongs to somebody else. Therefore, they are interiorized into other universes to such a degree that they are unable to even get a concept that isn't given to them exteriorly. Now, be, have, and do are run in a very simple fashion, but they can be, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to let other people do? What can you be? What are you willing to let other people be? What are people willing to let you be? And so forth. Well, now, this can be complicated as a process by adding barriers to it. Is what can you be, have, and do without being stopped? And that's an interesting twist on this. It puts the barrier in there, see? What can you be, have, and do without being stopped? And you'll find out that this will stop a freeclear who's having a rough time, and it'll stop him fast. The next one is, what could you be, have, and do without being exhausted? Which is probably a more powerful technique. What can you be, have, and do without becoming exhausted? You ask the pre-clear that. It helps clear up the effort band. Now, what can you be, have, and do without somebody getting angry at you? Very interesting. Clears up the emotional band. Pervasive questions, all of which add up to viewpoint straight wire, but with another twist. Now, just what can you be, have, and do? Of course, really belongs to viewpoint strain wire, because beings, havings, and doingness breaks down to the note of sex scale, doesn't it? So, as we look over viewpoint straight wire, we discover that we have a very powerful technique, but one which requires a great deal of searchingness on the part of an auditor, and one which an auditor shouldn't really try to run just blah, 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 you know? You give them the question, and they get a lag, and then he gives them a question again, and they get a lag, and he gives them a question. Yeah, you ought to know how to do that. But for heaven's sake, stay in communication with this boy, because if you don't, you're not going to find out where he's sticking. And viewpoint straight wire is so powerful that it'll disorient him to a point where if you don't ask him questions and keep him on the line and head him in toward certainty, he's not going to know what he's doing. You're just going to have to monitor this pre-clear real strong. You can make this as an observation. The simpler the process in Scientology, the closer it is to basics, the more you're going to have to bird dog this pre-clear. The more you're going to have to talk to this case, find out what he's doing, discover what his certainty is, pilot him through the shoals and rocks. The simpler the process, the more hell down fives you're going to hit and the more lost he's going to get. And the faster he's going to come out of whatever bog he's in. Every time you try to use this viewpoint straight wire in a coffee shop, you're going to come off second best. Got two long lags, and so on. You ask this person on a hit-and-run type of auditing, you say to somebody, what kind of body wouldn't you mind looking at? Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? Well, I think I'll have another cup of coffee. He goes, gog. He really started to do it while you just threw him right into the middle of a bunch of short circuits in a computing machine, and there he is, unhappy, to say the least. Now, using it then actually requires a great deal of alertness and searchingness on the part of the auditor. And again, may I remind you that you are not talking enough to your preclear to get information back out of your preclear. Several reasons why you ought to talk to a preclear, you know. One of them is that you want to shift valence on him. You want to get him into the valence of where he's in the valence of his machinery so he'll run it. So if you keep asking the questions, you put yourself into the role of a thetan. That's what a thetan does. He sits in the middle of the bank and asks all kinds of questions. So if you're sitting there asking questions, he says, well, I'm sunk. I've got to be these machines. That's all that's left for me to be, so run them out. You get that? By you asking lots of questions and being very, are you absolutely sure of that? Do you know that's... That's what you can look at. Now, let's see if we can get one just a little faint of that. Now, do you know that you're certain of that? And so forth. That's totally mechanically putting you in the role of a thing. Puts him in the role of a machine. You can make him be his machinery. He'll, making the pre-clear, do what the machines are doing. So if you make him do what the machines are doing, the machine will run out. Shouldn't be overlooked as an auditor. There aren't a lot of these little mechanisms. Actually, there are darn few of them. Now, remember that all this stuff works better interiorized than exteriorized for a black five. Now, remember that. Don't ever get anybody out of his head. Remember that. You're liable to get somebody out of his head, you're liable to get clear. And then what would you do? He's liable to work fast. He's liable to be able to get 40 or 50 things he wouldn't mind viewing in the space of a minute or so. He's liable to start off like a house fire. Of course, that'd mean you'd lose control of him. So let's keep him in his head and keep him nailed down, keep him under control, keep him stopped. Never ask him any questions. Okay, and just in case you were asleep when I said that, that's a joke. Well, this is how you use viewpoint straight wire, and I wish you a lot of luck with it, and I want you to use it now in your sessions very strongly.